Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season.
Welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where Coachella is all the rage for everybody but the Lakers. And when I say Coachella, I ain't talking about the music, lights, drug show out in the heat. I'm talking about NBA Coachella coaching carousel. Tommy, how are you doing?
Where are you going with this?
How are you doing, and how did you like my intro?
Your intro was amazing. I honestly, you know, in case it wasn't extremely obvious to everyone out there, we completely... This is like mostly ad-libbed, right? This podcast. So when we start, I have no idea what you're going to say every time. And I'm always very impressed.
That's how you got to do it. With that said, thank you for listening to us and following us. You can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Also, you can catch us on iTunes and SoundCloud. If you could please rate and review us on iTunes, that would be of great help to us. The more you rate and review us on iTunes, the more analytics and statistical and numerical data the Lakers will add onto their pitch for future free agents this summer. All right. With all that being said,
nice.
We have survived the Mamba apocalypse. You know, the age of Kobe and the era of Kobe is done, and we are ready to move forward with the future and with the Lakers' legacy. But believe it or not, there's playoff basketball going on. Just really quickly, what have been your early impressions of the games? I think for me, for the most part, it's been largely a bust, especially this past weekend. And the only interesting games have been the Indiana and Raptors series, the first game of the Boston Hawks series, and of course, the Mavericks miraculously beating OKC last night, thanks to a buzzer, pretty much, because yeah. Steven Adams wasn't able to get his... fingertips off that ball quick enough. So how about you? How's the playoffs been for you?
Yeah, I mean, so far it's gone essentially how I think most sophisticated basketball fans expected it to go. The only series that I'm holding out hope for still, it's only been one game so far, but the Clippers and Portland series I think is going to be a lot closer. Maybe not like super close, but it's going to be closer than that first game would suggest.
Yeah,
that first game made it look like it was going to be totally Clippers one-sided, but I think Portland is a little bit, they're interesting, and if they can steal one game on the road, it's going to be extremely hard to beat them at Portland. But yeah, so that's about it, though.
I mean, otherwise, it seems like every other team is, like, supremely outmatched by the other team.
Yeah, and, I mean, this year in general, in both conferences, it was really a case of, like, two halves of conferences, right? Like, the top three teams in the West are just so much better than everyone else. And then in the East, you have... I mean, the East, I guess, is a little bit closer because it's pretty much the Cavs, and then it's a toss-up. But even then, it's like, okay, I think Detroit's an interesting team. They have no chance against the Cavs. I think, you know, the Hornets are an interesting team, but Miami has too much playoff experience and, you know, veteran experience. And then... with the Boston Hawks, first of all, both of those teams are semi-boring. Also, with Avery Bradley just going down for the series, it's not going to be that close.
Yeah, for sure. As I was saying before I lost you, I think out of all the remaining series, I think, like you said, you still have hope for the Portland and Clippers series. For me, I actually still have hope in the Charlotte Heat series because I think they're pretty evenly matched, especially with Miami not having Bosch. Because if you look at it on that sense, Wade and Dragic are really their only guys with experience. I guess Joe Johnson and Amari too, but yeah. I don't really consider them that prime in the prime.
Look, Luol Deng is not going to score 30 points in every game in this series, you know, so, and Charlotte's not as bad as they looked in the first game, so it'll definitely get closer. But I agree with you that series, along with the Clippers Blazers, is probably the going to be the only interesting series. Although I'm like rooting super hard for Dallas to upset Oklahoma City somehow.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, we're under no impression that Dallas all of a sudden has a take on this series or a lead in this series. But I mean, all we can hope for here is for them to just frustrate Kevin Durant a little bit, add some doubt into Kevin Durant's mind that he's like, oh, gosh, we're struggling again and we can't even like close out a team like Dallas easily. Like, that's all we really need, you know, for the Dallas to make it annoying enough for Kevin Durant.
Pretty much what you said, if they can annoy, okay, if Dallas can annoy Oklahoma City enough, Oklahoma City's most likely going to lose to the Spurs, right? So the key is, like, I think it would have been less impactful if Oklahoma City swept Dallas and then lost, like, 4-2 to the Spurs or something. That's less impactful than, like, struggling against a Dallas team and then losing 4-1 or 4-2 against the Spurs. Like, if they even lose two games to this, like, geriatric, completely hobbled Dallas Mavericks team, I think that should put some reasonable doubt in Kevin Durant's mind.
Yeah, for sure. An amazing job again by Rick Carlisle. I mean, you and I called this. We were like, we just have to hope that Rick Carlisle's coaching powers come to play here. And it obviously didn't in the first game where they completely bombed. Yeah. But they obviously made some adjustments in the second game. And Russell Westbrook not playing defense and Kevin Durant shooting 7 for 33 obviously helped.
Game, like, Dallas so, yeah. got blown out. But if you watch that game in the first quarter, Dallas was getting every look they wanted. They were just missing wide open shot over and over and over. And when you start a game like that on the road in game one of the playoffs, like, it's really hard to bounce back. So, again, I don't think they're going to win this series. I'd be even a little bit surprised if they won another game. But if they can just annoy Oklahoma City, I think that'll be good for anything. Anything helps at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, my last note on this is that, you know, Billy Donovan clearly is not doing anything new that Scott Brooks hadn't done before. Or he's probably even doing worse because they're pretty much doing the same thing that people complained about Scott Brooks. So that could also lend Kevin Durant to say, all right, I just need a clean break from all of this. So, yeah, with all that said, that is our playoff talk. Who wants to hear about real good basketball?
Yeah.
Whatever. We're talking about the Lakers here in this podcast. Woo! Speaking of which, like I introed the show, the Lakers are kind of sitting on the sidelines right now because there's a bunch of coaching stuff going on in the NBA, not so much for the Lakers, but for everybody else. There's a coaching carousel going on. The Brooklyn Nets named their head coach for next season. I think his name's Kenny Atkins, and right now he's an assistant coach for the Hawks, Atkinson. And then Earl Watson got signed to be the head coach full-time for the Phoenix Suns today to a 3-year deal. And then I think all day today we were also hearing about Tom Thibodeau possibly going to the Minnesota Timberwolves and taking on full basketball operational control as well as coaching. And then alongside with that, I've heard that they were also interviewing the likes of Jeff Van Gundy, who's looking to get back into the coaching game after like 5-8 years of not coaching. And then we also have the Sacramento Kings, who knows what the hell they're doing, but they're interviewing like Mike Woodson, Jackson, Vinny Del Negro,
Mark
and
Jackson
Sam Mitchell.
Would be actually coming for that.
So that's who they're interviewing. Then again, like, who's going to want to interview for Sacramento anyway? So, you know, beggars can't be choosers in that scenario. But yeah, with all that going on, here we stand with the Lakers, still with Byron Scott not doing anything. Granted, it's only been a week. What's your take on this whole Byron Scott thing? I know people were freaking out last week, just the day after the Kobe game, that we hadn't fired Byron Scott. But I think we were both aligned in the fact that there's no reason for them to fire him so quickly, let alone before he's had his exit interview. So now is the crucial stage, right, where it's like we're getting into a week after, 2 weeks after. What's your take on this whole Byron Scott thing and the possibility that, you know, there were rumors that Jeannie Buss is pushing for Byron Scott to stay here or pushing to have Byron stay one more year so she can fire him and bring in Phil Jackson, all this stuff.
So
what are you hearing?
Historically, I think some guy, you retweeted this, but on the Twitter account for this podcast, but historically the Lakers have been very good about putting a positive PR spin when they let go of a coach. Mike D'Antoni, Mike Brown, and now Byron have all, you know, they've all had statements by Mitch and statements by Jim and statement, you know, I guess now you can even lump Jeannie in there. Like, the common thread between all of these quote unquote resignations has been like, everyone said, oh, given the circumstances, we think they did great. You know what I mean? And They say that every time. This whole thing about Genie. Yeah. I think we talked about this like weeks ago, but when I mentioned that quote unquote that person who felt that maybe has some sort of inside perspective, the way that they were going to spin this was to make it less brutal. They wanted to make it seem like they are seriously considering bringing him back. My understanding is they have zero intention of bringing him back, and I don't see how you could bring someone back who in consecutive seasons set franchise records for loss for losing. You know what I mean? Like last year he set a Los Angeles Lakers franchise, team record for losing. And then this year he set the entire franchise history record for losing. You can make excuses. And I mean, they made excuses last year with the injuries. And I think even Mitch deep down didn't buy that. And then this year the excuse was the youth. And I know Mitch doesn't buy that because he signed veterans, like he knows who's on the team. And of course, they make the whole Kobe thing. So I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to figure out how exactly they're going to go about getting rid of Byron. And he mentioned in his exit interview that they're going to have, quote unquote, an informal meeting in the next week or two. And I expect at that time they're going to talk with him about how he wants to spin this, because I'm pretty sure they're going to fire him if he doesn't agree to just taking a resignation. You know what I mean? Like, they're probably, what the reports are going to come out are like, oh, you know, he's had a change of heart and like the Kobe season took a lot out of him. And, you know, they'll think of something, right? Or, you know, with D'Antoni, the story was like, they're not going to give me an extension, so now I'm leaving. No, the reality is they were trying to, like, force him out, you know? And it's in everybody's best interest. We don't want to burn bridges with the Showtime generation. And Byron doesn't want to have, like, the bad resume stamp of, like, getting fired from his previous job. So, you know, and he and like, besides that, it's like, you don't have to... He doesn't have to lose all ties to the team. He can see him still be involved with the team. It's like he can work on Time Warner. He can work as a scout. There are other things he can do. And so it makes no sense to burn bridges by just like brutally firing him like right after the season's over. So I'm for some reason, despite all the stuff coming out about this and that, Genie says this or whatever, I have zero concern about Byron being fired. I don't see how anyone in their right mind would go into a summer like this with a coach, like especially a coach that they didn't really want. You know, D'Antoni didn't do that bad of a job for us. And going into the Carmelo and LeBron summer, we let him go because we wanted to give those top free agents a say, you know, maybe not directly, but like implicitly a say in who the coach would be. I don't see how we wouldn't do the same thing for Kevin Durant. You can make the argument that last year there were no like alpha, which I mean, I agree. There were no real alpha superstars out there. It was like the two big names were DeAndre and LaMarcus Aldridge, who were both like second or third type options. And this year with Kevin Durant out there, I think there's absolutely no reason to not get rid of Byron and give Kevin Durant that option to come in and be like, okay, do you want Scott Brooks? Do you want Thibodeau? Do you want Van Gundy? Do you want Luke? Like, if you have Kevin Durant, you're pretty much getting anyone you want.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like you said, if we already allowed a guy like Mike D'Antoni, who has no ties to this organization, if we allowed him a chance to bow out of this gracefully, why wouldn't we do more for Byron Scott, who's a Lakers legend and has direct ties to this organization? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm actually surprised that there's not more effusive praise to Byron, but he's actually getting stock answers here, like you said, of literally, given the circumstances, Byron Scott has done an adequate or good, solid job. You know, they should be piling on the praise a little bit more, but given that, it almost seems like the writing's on the wall here. 2 years ago, when they fired Mike D'Antoni, they did the same spiel. Mitch said that they were going to talk things through. And then two weeks later, on April 30th or May 1st, Mike D'Antoni announced that he was going to resign. Or as World Peace said, he's going to re-sign with the Lakers. but yeah, it's pretty much following the same thread line. I'm not exactly sure why people are freaking out. I think it's just been the last 2 years have just made people so impatient that literally the second day after the season, people are like, why haven't we fired Byron Scott? And I get it, man. I'm getting impatient too, especially seeing the added urgency that it seems other teams have especially like the Timberwolves, Suns, the one, you know, that yeah, obviously yeah. lends ahead, to the sorry. Pressure here. But yeah.
I was just going to add the one caveat I put out that everything you read is like online, like you don't know like where this person's sources are, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. My impression is that the Lakers are, from what I've read, is that the Lakers are constantly putting out feelers for other coaches. I just feel that given how the Lakers operate, you let something leak. It's in your best interest to not do that because you're cutting off all your ties with that organization at that point. I think some organizations are not as strict about that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I think the Lakers, if they're reaching out to Thibodeau, if they're reaching out to Van Gundy, these guys all have agents, right? Like, just like players. So the agents of these guys know that if you're dealing with the Lakers and they have a coach under a contract, they don't want the PR mess of, oh, the Lakers have expressed interest in Tom Thibodeau getting out there while Byron Scott is still under contract. So I'm not there in the room with Mitch. I have no idea what he's doing. Very possible he's not doing anything, but I think unlike maybe 2 years ago when we first hired Byron, a lot of the top big name free agent coaches were going right away. Like Alvin Gentry, sorry, that was last year, but whoever there was out there, like, who's that guy who became the coach of Brooklyn? Yeah, he was gone within like a week. Guys were flying super fast off the board. And that's when it was scary to be a Laker fan because it was like, okay, we got rid of D'Antoni, but like literally everybody else is gone now. So far, there have been no big names flying off the board. It's been Earl Watson, who is a relative unknown, and Kenny Atkinson, who is, both of these guys are first-time coaches. So until we see like Jeff Van Gundy, Thibodeau, Hornacek, Luke, until we see these guys like committing to other situations, I'm operating under the assumption that there's word out there that the Lakers spot might be available or is available, and people are sort of waiting to see what happens with that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it would be in the Lakers' best interest, though, to do this sooner rather than later. I think we both agree. Neither of us are freaking out, but at a certain point, there will be, like, a freak out code level red or something at some point. So I guess let's talk about that. At this point, what is your timeline looking like? I think we had an over-under bet on when this would happen. You know, I've been saying in the podcast in previous episodes that I think there's a PR play here for the Lakers to fire him after the lottery just in case we lose our lottery pick and people's spirits are down. The Lakers are going to fire Byron Scott and lift it back up. But reassessing everything, I think that's just too long of a wait and also unnecessary to drag it out that long. Not only for the organization, but also for Byron Scott. It's just an awkward thing to say we keep our pick and then we tell Byron, hey, sorry, bro, we kept our pick, you're fired, you know? If they were going to do this anyway, why would they wait that long, you know what I mean? And then also if they lose their pick, they're just like, hey, Byron, sorry, you're fired. It's just an awkward situation for everybody, for them to wait till the lottery, find out the results, and then a week later, like, fire him. Even given that, the Lakers, I think, have a hard deadline, June 1st, to really fire him. And I'm not sure what the contractual stipulations are, but I think they have till June 1st. So they actually have an out there where if they keep him on after June 1st, he's going to be the head coach no matter what. But they have that time frame. But yeah, given that, I do think that it has to happen before the lottery ping pong balls results happen. And it has to happen, within the next week or two. How about you?
I think that there's no way it goes to June 1st. I think that it's most likely going to happen, I want to say, by May 1st. I know the lottery happens in like mid to late May, May 17th. Okay. So I think it'll for sure be before that. I want to say, honestly, I would be pretty surprised if it didn't happen like next. I'm still not going to freak out totally, but I would be pretty surprised if it didn't happen by next week or the first week of May, because you can't, like, it's like you said, as cool as you want to play this, you also, there are other considerations. These other coaches are trying to gain employment as well. They're not going to sit around forever and wait for you to make a decision. So you at least have to hold the spot open. I think if the spot becomes open, guys are going to wait and see what happens with like free agency, or honestly, we might just take a guy and say, this is who we think is the best, and free agents deal with it. But yeah, I think for that reason, you just sort of have to put the message out there that, like, we're moving on from that era. Like, Kobe's gone, Byron's gone. This is, like, going to be a new team with our young guys moving forward.
I think the sooner you make a clear decision and show everybody the direct path you're going on, it's just more positive and beneficial for everyone, not only the fans, but every, you know, the coaching candidates, like you said, the organization. It'll just feel like a fresh new start. And the sooner they do that, the better. Even if they fire Byron Scott before the lottery, I think that positive energy will carry forth even if we lose our pick. You know what I mean? We're going to lose our pick. We're going to be sad, but then we're going to remind ourselves, oh yeah, Byron Scott's gone. Now we can look forward to free agency, not only player free agency, but coaching free agency to lift our spirits. So firing him in the next 2 weeks is the way to go. We will start to sweat really badly.
If it hasn't happened by May 15th, it hasn't happened yet. I admit I'll get a little.
Yeah, I mean, there's still like a slight scenario where they still wait it out, because there's a way you can spin this, right? If they keep their pick, then they tell Byron, hey, man, we decided to go a different direction. We didn't realize we were going to keep our pick. We got Ben Simmons, and we realized you're not the guy to coach a young group, so we're going to move forward. So they can still do that, but it's just a lot more dicier, and it'll make everybody kind of be on their pins and needles pretty much. So yeah, Lakers, fire Byron Scott, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens tomorrow, 4:20. And we're all going to literally get lit. 4:20. That would be the perfect date to fire Byron Scott. And it's going to be all about fire. So yeah, Lakers, please do that. Lakers fans worldwide will be so happy. I guess with that said, given all that, we'll close this coaching segment out with, who would be your like top candidates for the Lakers to look at? You know, we've got Scott Brooks has entered the candidacy here recently, talking about how if Byron Scott was gone, he'd be interested in the job. Obviously, Jeff Van Gundy, who we didn't know was interested in coming back, although there were rumors that he was, is obviously in play as well. Tom Thibodeau seems like he's going to go to a team that'll give him full basketball operational control. So that's probably rules us out. And I think there was a report that he's already ruled the Lakers out. So he's probably most likely going to be with the Timberwolves, which makes a whole ton of sense given their talent there.
Okay, I don't know about that Thibodeau report you were citing. So what I read was that was more of a mini pitch. And my understanding there was that they don't think Thibodeau really wants to be there. And so their way of baiting him into coming is by giving him full control. I think if you gave Thibodeau a team with loads of young talent, a top draft pick, and potentially two big free agents, or like even better yet, if you sign the big free agents before, you know, you make the offer to him, then I see no reason why he wouldn't come to the Lakers. I have read that Thibodeau apparently, I don't know if he does this podcast by himself. Have you heard about Thibodeau's podcast? Or like he just goes on podcasts a lot? I don't know.
No.
That's what I'm saying. No.
Thibodeau
so
Legacy
I don't know
podcast?
If he actually like does this himself. I just read some reference to like Thibodeau being on podcasts. So I don't know if there's like a podcast that he goes on a lot or like, I mean, JJ Redick has one. So I guess theoretically it's possible he just has one, but I doubt it. But anyway, he apparently has made comments on podcasts recently suggesting that he's very open to adapting new philosophies with regards to offense. And he's sort of like taking an understanding to like how the game is drastically changing from his style. I would almost put him like near the very top of the list. I think he's extremely smart. He seems to me to be like a good combination of somebody who could manage egos, and like he's experienced. He's been deep in the playoffs already, and I think with the right team, he could do really good things.
Yeah.
But yeah, besides him...
Wait, sorry, can I jump in real quick about your Thibodeau part?
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, I think the most important part to remember, too, is that he's going to greatly help our defense. And also, if you remember when he was an assistant coach with Boston, he was actually in charge of, like, that... Obviously, they had the big three, but Rajon Rondo was pretty much like a rookie that year, that they got the big three, too. So that's, like, almost a similar situation if the Lakers can rebuild quickly, to have, like, that really young, unproven point guard still, but he was able to obviously hone Rajon Rondo's talent there and, you know, have it mesh with Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce. So if the Lakers are able to get some stars in, you know, he'd essentially have to do the same with D'Angelo Russell, and that's all you can hope for. And also hopefully teach Jordan Clarkson to play defense and all that stuff. So
So I'd put Thibs definitely near the top of the list. Beyond him, I'm not really sure. I mean, a lot of it, again, is, as we always talk about, is going to depend on who becomes available. I think next option I would look at is Luke. Sure. Every time I say this, I feel ridiculous because Luke has like never, he coached the defending champion Golden State Warriors to like a really good record, right? Like big deal.
Yeah.
So we have no idea how he would react to being the head coach of a team that, you know, is trying to rebuild and like, or like to the extent we acquire top free agents, Luke would find himself as the coach suddenly of a team that like is expected to like go to the Western Conference Finals. Like, how is he going to deal with that? You know, it's hard to say.
So you're not confident in Luke's assistant coaching staff of Jordan Farmar, Shannon Brown, Sasha Bujicic.
Richard Jefferson, of course.
Yeah, you know, that coaching staff sounds amazing to me.
I know, right? No, so, I mean, I still have him near the top. So without going into too much detail for everybody, I mean, my list is probably the same as most people. It would be Thibs, Luke. I have Hornacek up there. I like Hornacek. Who else?
Scott Brooks. I think both of us have changed our opinion on Scott Brooks because he's a great developer of young dudes. He pretty much brought those OKC young guys up all together to the point where they made the finals. So
right. So because of that, I sort of changed my tune on Scott Brooks. And he has a good relationship with Durant and Westbrook. I think that would be interesting for that reason as well. Anybody would be better than Byron Scott, so it just sort of like clouds your judgment a little bit, to, you know, because we've had our frame of reference is like it's like below ground level. It's like garbage. You know what I mean?
Pretty much.
When you've been eating garbage for 2 years, suddenly like the worst food looks really good.
Suddenly, Del Taco is pretty good, but yeah, suddenly Del Taco looks good. But yeah, I mean, the good thing about the Luke Walton thing is right now, I mean, Phoenix was going to be one of his options. And then also if the Thibodeau thing works out, whether or not he really wants to be there, if he ends up signing with the Wolves, that limits really Luke Walton's attractive options. He's not going to go to the Kings. He's unlikely to go to the, you know, the Knicks, despite what people are saying here and there. So if Luke wants to become a coach next year, the Lakers are the most attractive option, in my opinion. So that if people are looking for that, that's one positive for having possibly getting Luke in as the head coach. And yeah, I think, you know, my list is pretty much the same. I put Luke at the top and then Thibs and then any combination of Scott Brooks. I think Jeff Van Gundy, I love Jeff Van Gundy. Obviously, we don't know whether he's lost his coaching chops over the last 8 years, but you'd think with him commentating and being part of the game-by-game commentary that he's been in touch with the game, at least on that level.
Yeah.
So maybe he hasn't lost that much. And if anything, maybe he's been able to scheme a little bit more and see the transition into the new NBA. And I just have confidence in Jeff Van Gundy because he's a guy who can handle egos and he's kind of funny. So
yeah.
I'm just drawn to guys with likable personalities like that outside of just coaching. So yeah, I mean, that'll wrap up our coaching segment pretty much. That's clearly not going to be the end of it. We're just getting started with that. And hopefully once the Lakers fire Byron Scott, and given the way this thing has happened with our podcast, every time we drop a podcast, the biggest news happens right after, and then we have to make like an emergency podcast. So I'm very much expecting this to happen tomorrow. So everybody cross your fingers, man. Cross your fingers. It could happen. The podcast might be sounding a very different tomorrow. We might be a little bit and I think everybody would be totally fine listening to that podcast. But with that said, yeah, this is just the beginning. Hopefully the firing happens soon and we can legitimately lay out the foundation for the future.
Well, whoever she is, tell her thanks.
Whoever she is,
Trevor,
I said thanks.
Wow. That was my acting debut, Young and the Restless.
I thought we'd do some Lakers awards, end of the season Lakers awards, and end of the season NBA awards. And then I'll also throw in our preseason predictions for both of those, which is
shit.
Hilariously catastrophic. So let's just go from the top. This should be kind of easy and fast. We'll do Lakers MVP and then, or let me, maybe we'll do NBA MVP first and then the Lakers MVP, and then we'll go through all the awards that way.
Okay.
All right. So first, who do you have for the NBA MVP? Okay. Just to preface this, our preseason predictions were for you. You had Durant or LeBron, and I had Durant or Anthony Davis for my preseason MVP candidates.
Nice.
All right. Who's your
Steph Curry? Steph Curry is the best player in the world, and he's unbelievable, and he's MVP for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, somehow he managed to be better than last year, and he managed to make more threes than last year, and then he now holds the record for most three-pointers made in a season. So, I mean, enough. We don't have to go further into that. So, Steph Curry, there you go. All right, here's a more interesting one. Who's your Lakers MVP?
That is an interesting one because we won 17 games this year. I would say, who contributed the most to our 17 wins? you go first. This is tough for me, right, honestly. Okay.
So I originally had like an actual player who may have contributed to the wins, but I decided last minute to go a different angle with this.
Okay.
And so I'm giving my MVP to Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
Because at the end of all of this, we're going to remember this season for being Kobe Bryant's season and literally that last game he gave us. That's all that matters. If we lose our draft pick, it's going to suck, but we're going to look back on this season as the Kobe season. And I think for by and large, he's done a good enough job giving the young guys firsthand experience of what it's like to be in such an electric atmosphere. Not even just 60-point game, but there have been sprinklings throughout where they saw his intensity, him get a little bit hot, and I think those moments stick with them, you know, whether or not he mentored them outside of that, which I think he did, and he's already committed to doing in the summer. I think Kobe Bryant has done a relatively good job of bringing up the young guys while also kind of ending his legacy this season. It's been very annoying at times, you know. We've hated watching him play basketball. We've hated him hogging the ball and not giving the young guys a chance. But outside of that, I think he still gave Lakers fans a lasting memory this season in spite of all the crap that was going on. And I think even if the young guys were stunted on the on court, I think they learned a lot off the court just by Kobe Bryant being in their presence and being on those plane rides with them and then being in the practices with them and all that stuff. So that's why I give my MVP to Kobe Bryant. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to try to think of something like more creative, but I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. There's no one other than Kobe. If you're thinking about who, since we only had 17 wins, it's not that hard to think about this, but
yeah.
Who like single-handedly won us the most games? And it's easily Kobe won us like single-handedly like 5 or 6 games probably. D'Angelo maybe one or two at most. So I think you have to go with Kobe and I agree, Kobe.
Yep. All right. So let's move on to Sixth Man of the Year. So for the NBA, this already came out. You know, it was Jamal Crawford. He's won it 3 times now. Our preseason prediction for Sixth Man of the Year, you had Isaiah Thomas, which would have been a great pick.
If
he hadn't become a starter, obviously. I had Joakim Noah, which might have been somewhat of a reasonable pick if he hadn't been injured like 75% of the year.
Right.
So with that being said, who do you have to close it this year for the NBA? Do you agree with Jamal Crawford?
I actually don't agree with Jamal Crawford. I feel like every time they choose him, it's just like laziness. Like,
yeah,
Jamal Crawford he's so similar to Lou Williams in so many ways. I mean, he's taller and he's got a little bit more swag in his game, but like people see Jamal Crawford put up these insane lines and like come off the bench in a big playoff game and hit 30 points and like everybody loses their mind. But like, you're ignoring the long stretches of games where he goes through where just like Lou Williams, he'll shoot like 2 for 9, like 4 games in a row.
Yep.
Not to say he's not good. I mean, he's definitely one of he should be in the conversation almost every year. I think this year was like really weak to give it to him. I think Enes Kanter had a really good case. I think Iguodala had a decent case. I just think giving it to Jamal Crawford is kind of lazy and going purely off of just his points per game.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think Jamal Crawford, he had a fine season, but
solid. I mean, he's definitely up there.
Yeah. I mean, his stat inflation came when Blake Griffin was out and he was still coming off the bench, but he was pretty much averaging 35 minutes a game.
Yeah,
you know?
Dude.
So he was like just a de facto bench player.
Exactly.
So.
And what a lot of people are forgetting here is the Clippers were trying to trade this fool at the trade deadline. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's how bad he was playing. And after the trade deadline, like you said, when it became clear that Blake and like they had other injury issues and Jamal started getting a ton of extra time, like you said, his numbers got super inflated up to his career averages, but he was well below his career averages for at least half the season. And a lot of people were saying, oh, this guy's 36, he might finally be done. So
for me, you know, I agree with you. I like Iguodala as a candidate. Cantor was very efficient and had the highest PER out of any of those guys. He's pretty good. For bias sake, I'm going to give it to Jeremy Lin because I can. It's my pick.
Yeah.
And it would just make Byron Scott look like an idiot. And I think even Jeremy Lin, when he struggles, it's not due to unselfishness. You know what I mean? It's just him struggling, and then he'll just get back on track and try and find his teammates. And just Charlotte just overall just had an unexpected year. So I'm giving it to Jeremy Lin.
All right.
So with that said, let's move on to Defensive Player of the Year for the NBA. In the preseason, you actually had Draymond Green in there and Rudy Gobert. So those are your two candidates, and I settled on Rudy Gobert. And I think the Defensive Player of the Year award came out today, right? Or yesterday. And Kawhi Leonard won that. So how are you today in terms of that award?
I agree with Kawhi Leonard. I, for some reason, and maybe this is because I was following this on Twitter and so many people lost it over Draymond Green not winning it, and it made me more defensive of Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if I would have necessarily picked Kawhi before the results came out, but I think it's a very... I think ranking defensive players is so hard. It's become a little bit easier with analytics now. But even that doesn't tell the entire story. Draymond Green is constantly... He can defend 1 through 5, and everyone's like, oh, he can and does defend 1 through 5. Guess what? The Spurs have, like, an all-around really good team defense, and Kawhi is never in a position where he has to defend 1 through 5. That's, like, not the style they play. And if they played that style, he probably could defend 1 through 5 as good, if not better, than Draymond. You know, so... Yeah. It's
for sure.
I don't know why everybody got so defensive. Both of those guys are outstanding defenders, and I think that I've seen Kawhi single-handedly shut down guys much better than Draymond has.
Yeah, I mean, I have no gripes either. I could have said Draymond. I could have said Kawhi. I don't have anything against Kawhi. I think Draymond's utility comes when he can defend bigger guys pretty well.
Yeah.
But outside of that, both of them are really great defenders, and
They're both amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. So with that said, who do we have for the Lakers Defensive Player of the Year? Earlier on the season, we obviously had the default Roy Hibbert. But to close the season, what are your thoughts now? Who's your Lakers?
Roy Hibbert actually surprisingly was one of our worst defenders, considering, which is amazing, an amazing statement to make considering how bad we were defensively. And how many horrible defenders we have. I would say Brandon Bass, surprisingly. He was playing undersized for most of the season, and he started off really poorly. And when we were playing him at center to start the season, I was like losing my mind. Playing him as center off the bench, like in the first 15 games or so, I was losing my mind. And as the season went on, I think he really adapted surprisingly well, and he became a really good weak side shot blocker. This guy's only like 6'6 or 6'7 or something. So he did a great job, and our team was so bad overall defensively. Besides him and then like a secondary person, I might say D'Angelo, although like off the ball, he left a lot to be desired.
Defensive player of the year, eh?
For our team.
Yeah, that's true.
And besides those two guys, I can't really think of anyone.
All right. No, I actually like your Brandon Bass pick a lot. I hadn't even thought of him. I have Larry Nance as our Defensive Player of the Year just because he showed enough potential to me with his rebounding, his hustle, his energy, just showing some perimeter defense as well. But I probably, thinking about it more, I'd probably give it to Brandon Bass. But I think in the future, it'll be Larry Nance.
So, I completely agree with you. If you're thinking who showed potential, like if you're factoring in what Larry Nance showed, if you extrapolate that over a whole season, it probably is him. But he got such inconsistent minutes, and he's a rookie, so it's really hard to tell. But like, yeah, potential wise that guy's going to be moving forward one of our better defenders probably.
Yeah, for sure. All right, moving on, most improved player. So in the preseason, this is actually might be our only prediction that we got right. In the preseason, you had CJ McCollum or Otto Porter for your candidates. I had Harrison Barnes, Aaron Gordon, or Otto Porter, but I also brought up CJ McCollum. My only reasoning for knocking McCollum down was I didn't think the Portland Trail Blazers were going to be any good.
I know.
But look, here we go. They made the playoffs, and it was an easy call there. So CJ McCollum ended up winning Most Improved Player Award, and would you still stick with that now?
Yes, I definitely think it was McCollum. He had a great year. He deserves it.
Yeah. So I'm actually not going to stick with it. Dun, dun, dun.
What?
I'm going to be a little more creative and wacky.
All right.
And go kind of left field here and give the Most Improved Player Award to Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so I just really liked what I saw in terms of when Jason Kidd set him loose in the second half of the season and actually played him at point guard. That's when the Bucks started winning. That's when they started playing better. And that's when Giannis's game just went to a whole new level. And we saw this crazy Russell Westbrook type, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo. And Russell Westbrook with efficiency, you know. We were looking at his stats, and the most impressive part about what Giannis was doing was how efficient he was on the offense, like shooting 50%, and then also his assist-to-turnover ratio. This guy, for stretches, was getting, like, 8 to 10 assists with, like, 2 turnovers.
It was pretty insane for a while.
I was like, what is going on, you know? And outside of that, his defensive stats went skyrocketed as well. So, I mean, this guy just, second half of the season, just went absolutely nuts. So sky's the limit for him, definitely, especially if he can continue to hone in his jump shot and extend it out to the three-point land. So
yeah.
Okay, so for the Lakers, kind of a tricky award because there's not many people you can look at.
Yeah, but, we didn't have that many people. They were the same people.
Exactly. So for the Lakers, who is your most improved player?
I'm actually, despite all the crap we talk about this guy on this podcast, I'm going to go with Clarkson.
All right.
He did what he did last year in stretches consistently over the course of a whole season. He had way less explosive games, and that I can't really blame him for. He was playing with much, despite our record, he was on a much better team. On that team last year, if you think about who he was going through stretches where, like, he had to shoot or do everything or nobody was, right? Like,
yeah.
It was him and Lynn pretty much for, like, long stretches. None of our front court players could do and had any skills, and we had no wings with any skills. Our wings were all catch and shoot guys. So, Clarkson, I give him credit. He raised his 3-point percentage 4 points in 1 year. That's amazing. I think his scoring went up. If he continues to, he was a 15.5 point per game scorer. Yes, we were a 17-win team, but this guy was playing with D'Angelo Russell, Kobe Bryant, Julius Randle. Like, I'm amazed, actually, that he ended the season scoring that well. He needs to get back. He actually got worse, in my opinion, with his mid-range shot. So he needs to he needs to get that back. He needs to get his aggressive driving back. He completely got rid of that, but props to the increase in scoring and three-point shooting. If he can continue to improve his three-point shooting and his defense, he's going to be a very solid player.
For sure. So I'm going to sidestep the rules a little bit again. I'm getting all, like, wild and crazy here.
Oh, God.
And I'm going to give, I'm going
to
give the Most Improved Player Award to D'Angelo Russell, I'm pretty much breaking up the season.
I see what you do. That's clever.
Yeah, there you go.
Changing
right?
the rules, that's clever.
No, because literally,
tonight,
right?
Here's Larry Nance.
So, yeah, I mean, you get my rationale right? From preseason to this guy came out scared. People were doing the bus thing.
Oh, he played like
pretty
crap
much,
in the beginning of the year.
Pretty much everything that people question him for, you know, not being able to drive, not being able to go to his left, not being able to really shoot, not being able to play make. He shored up a lot of those things in the midst of the season, in the midst of having his minutes get jumbled around by Byron Scott. He was somehow able to show that he worked on his game. You know, I was so surprised that all of a sudden he, from the beginning of the season to the end, he rose his free throw percentage rate. He started driving a lot more, started getting a lot more foul calls. He started driving with his left hand. These are all things people were really concerned about. Like, this guy's not fast enough. He's not going to be able to drive into the lane. And by the end of the season, he was doing this, like, kind of like Tony Parker-esque and getting these floaters, getting and ones. So it was pretty amazing, his improvement and the way that he was able to show that he was able to shore up his handle a little bit, you know, shore up his three-point shot. His three-point shot came really, really quickly. A lot of people thought that it was going to take a little bit of time for him to get his shooting going because his shot release is kind of awkward, but he was able to that's the one part of his game that really flourished this year, I think. So, yeah, just in the span of this year alone, we got to see D'Angelo really grow up. And, you know, he had some pitfalls here and there with the, you know, Swaggy P drama and whatnot that really killed his momentum. But outside of that, I think he really showed a lot of improvement in a lot of areas that people were questioning him at the beginning of the year. So, yeah, that's my most improved player of the year.
Yeah, and just to add something about D'Angelo, this guy, yeah, like, one thing people don't talk about a lot is his defense got so much better over the course of the season. Like, right, his anticipation of, like, coming around a screen and anticipating where the guy's going to throw the ball and sticking his long arms into the passing lanes. How many steals did he? I feel like he got at least one to two of those anticipation, yeah, steals a game. And those are like those like Steph Curry type of plays where, like, even if he's not going to be the most athletic player on the floor because he's so smart and he has some decent physical tools, like way better physical tools than Steph Curry, mm-hmm, he can make himself into a very solid team defender, which, yeah, is really all you need.
Yeah, and at the very least, he just disrupts plays for the other team that people think they can make these easy passes, but they can't really around him. So
exactly,
very effective. And I forgot to totally mention his post-up game.
Oh, all of a sudden, yeah. His
post-up game comes out of nowhere, and people are like, what the heck? How does this guy look like a polished,
exactly,
like, post-up,
that's,
player?
Like, he's like, post-up thing, he made some comment about this in the combine, and that's something I just sort of wrote off as like, every player makes these comments about how they should do something obvious. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Okafor is like, oh, I need to get better. I need to get faster. Like, I need to be a better defender. Like, okay, obviously, but you're not going to do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that's one of the things. Like, D'Angelo comes in as like a 6'5 point guard with a 6'10 wingspan, and he makes all these comments about how he wants to utilize that size disadvantage to like be a really good post player. And I sort of wrote it off as like, oh, yeah, obviously, but you're not going to do it. That's just what people want to, yeah, hear. And then he came out and did it, and it shocked me that he was that good.
Yeah. He's very composed in there, and he can spin in either direction. I think my only thing was I didn't think he had enough strength to do it, but D'Angelo, even if he doesn't have enough strength, has these herky-jerky shots that he can take where he's off balance and it'll still go in, which really helps his post-up game, and he's just really light years ahead of what we thought he could do in the post-up game, and he can only get better once he gains more strength and gains more savviness and learns a little bit more footwork from Kobe. So really exciting stuff from D'Angelo there.
Yeah.
All right, lastly, our last award, and this is probably the easiest award to do, Rookie of the Year for the NBA. So in the preseason, you had Okafor, Tommy, because he thought he was going to get 18 points, which he did, 18.7 rebounds and all that stuff, which he did. I had Moutier because I thought he was going to get the ball a lot and do a lot of stuff and have free reign over the offense, which he did. But those paled in comparison to the real Rookie of the Year.
I mean,
Anthony Towns.
Carl Anthony Towns, man. You can't say enough about that guy. He exceeded. I knew this guy was the number one pick at some point. Like, I fully admit it. I was wrong last year. Like, half the year last year, probably until January or so, I thought Okafor was the best player. And I admitted I was wrong. It was Towns. But even I didn't think he was going to be this good. And I thought he was going to really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
man.
I thought he was going to be, like, to be the number one player in a draft, you're like that. You're going to be an all-star. But I didn't realize this guy was going to be starting your franchise tomorrow. Who would you take, Anthony Davis or Towns? Like, I don't even know if that's an easy question to answer.
Man.
You know, like, that's how good this guy was as a rookie. And it's the scary thing is he's only going to continue to get better because his jump shot wasn't even like his 3-point shot wasn't even that good this year. This fool plays like he's going to shoot like 38% from three. Like, who is this guy? He's going to be like a Tim Duncan and Dirk Nowitzki hybrid or something.
Yeah, man. I think you said it best, right? You compared him to Kevin Durant, but if Kevin Durant was brought up in this era, you know, he's got the handles, he's got the passing, he can shoot lights out from the perimeter.
Kevin Garnett, you mean?
Kevin Garnett. Did I say Kevin Durant?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, man, sometimes he looks like Kevin Durant.
He does,
He's done stuff on the perimeter where he moves like a wing, and I'm just like, this should not be possible right now. Not only on offense, but on defense, guarding people like he can, like he's a wing defender like Kawhi or something.
Like,
it's incredible what this guy can do.
I knew he was going to laterally adapt really well to the NBA, but first of all, even that exceeded my expectations. And second of all, his shot blocking fully translated, dude. It like I yeah. that was the one thing I was most skeptical about. I was like, this guy's not that explosive. Like, I get he has long arms, but blah blah blah, etc. You know, I've had all these like doubt skeptic comments, and oh my god, I don't know what, when you watch him play, it's like I said, I think the closest thing I can think of to him in terms of how fundamental and like in control he is Tim Duncan with like Dirk Nowitzki's jumper. You know, it's pretty ridiculous. And oh my god, you just pray to god that Minnesota doesn't get any other good players, because Wiggins and Towns with like the right coach, that's like a scary situation developing in Minnesota.
And I mean, luckily, guys, one of his best friends in the league is D'Angelo Russell, so we can only hope, man. We can only hope.
There's no way this guy's gonna stay in Minnesota forever. He's exactly. gotta come to the Lakers.
What's funny is in Vegas, I told my story about how I met D'Angelo Russell. What I didn't tell you was that Karl Anthony Towns was there too. And I was being stupid at the time, and I was like, no one wants a picture with Karl Towns because he's a Timberwolf and he's not a Laker. But looking back on it, I should have whispered some seeds of Laker stuff into him a little bit, you know. But to close this part out, you know, even I was on the Karl Anthony Towns train from the beginning of the NCAA season pretty much. But even then, once he got drafted, I was like, oh, this guy will probably take a little bit of time to develop, and he'll probably average 12 points and 8 rebounds to start out. And he ended up, 18 points and 9 rebounds or something ridiculous like that to end the season. So
he averaged a double-double.
Yeah. Oh, like, I think it was, let me just look it up right now so I'm not saying something stupid, but it's probably like 18 and 10.
Yeah, something like that.
Two blocks, something ridiculous, on 53% shooting.
On over 50% shooting. And it's not like this fool was just doing alley-oops. He was taking a lot of jumpers.
Yeah. He shot 34% from three already. And
oh, my God.
But he only took one three. Yeah.
He wasn't taking that many. Like, imagine when this guy starts taking threes, he's going to easily be a high 30s. I wouldn't be surprised if he was a low 40s% shooter from three. Like,
seriously,
he's so freaking good at like everything. It's like, how are you going to defend this guy in the future? You know, it's.
Yeah. And I mean, to answer your question, I would take Karl Anthony Towns over Anthony Davis, because Davis at the end of the day, Anthony Davis is your prototypical, he's a long ass power forward who can defend, who's insanely athletic, who can hit jump shots. But at the end of the day, Karl Anthony Towns can do all of those things, but he can also put the ball on the floor, which Anthony Davis can't do. He can also pass, which Anthony Davis isn't that great of a playmaker at all.
Yeah, Towns is way better of a playmaker already. Yeah,
and I mean, he moves like a wing player, and Anthony Davis, as talented as he is, he still looks awkward because he's so long. You know, he still walks or he still moves around like he's an alien. Karl Anthony Towns just moves like a wing player sometimes. So, very, very impressive. Karl Anthony Towns, well-deserved Rookie of the Year. He should probably be a Laker, but that's fine. To transition, who's your Lakers Rookie of the Year? Is it Huertas?
Anthony Brown. Spanish clown.
Brazilian clown.
Brazilian clown.
Larry Nance or D'Angelo Russell? Who will it be?
D'Angelo. Randall's not included, right? Even if Randall's included, I also
even if Randall's included.
Yeah, D'Angelo, he had an outstanding season. I mean, people it's hard to put it a season in perspective, especially when you're comparing a guy to Karl Anthony Towns. Like, look, everybody's gonna look like crap compared to him. But this guy shot 35% from three. Kevin Durant was 6'11" came in as this 6'11" rookie with a crazy long wingspan and was a big time shooter in college. And he shot 28% from three as a rookie. And now he's a career, despite that low shooting rookie season, he's a career 39% 3-point shooter. So yeah. D'Angelo, based on what we saw in college and based on what we saw in burst this year, is going to be 40% 3-point, high 30s, low 40s% 3-point shooter once he fully develops. So, sure. Yeah, I really like his 3-point shooting, his playmaking. We saw glimpses of, but even Mitch alluded to, we haven't seen all of D'Angelo's got a real gift for passing, and we haven't seen all of that yet. He exceeded my expectations for what I thought he was going to do this year. So I'm excited to see what happens next year.
Yeah, I mean, given everything he's had to overcome and putting that into context, he's had a tremendous year. I think it would have been more tremendous if that drama hadn't come out and ruined everything, and if Lou yeah. Will and Kobe Bryant hadn't screwed things up. Because if you remember, he had that stretch where he was 6 out of 7 games, 20-plus points, and then Lou Will comes back, Kobe comes back, and it just totally messed up his entire flow, adding on to the Swaggy P drama, and that kind of just torpedoed the end of his season.
And it's horrible. Otherwise,
yeah, his horrible coach, exactly. I mean, it could have been like a 15-point, you know, 4-4 kind of season. But given that, you know, we thought at the beginning of the season that D'Angelo was only going to average, you know, 11 points and 3 assists. And he ended up doing 13-3-3 and averaging almost 2 threes a game on 35% shooting. So, I mean, that's all you can ask for. And we are very excited with his progress. And we cannot wait to have him under a new coach starting tomorrow. So that's a great way to end this podcast. With all that said, we will catch you guys next time. We probably won't have a podcast next week, although... now that I'm saying this, we're probably going to have a coaching change, so we'll find a way to work it in somehow. I'm actually going to be in Philadelphia the next week, trusting some process on my own a little bit. So hopefully the Lakers will get going with their process. So with that said, again, please catch us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please rate and review us on iTunes. The more you rate and review us, that's how many coaching interviews we'll have in the next week alone. So there you go. Yeah. That is the end of this podcast and the end of our regular season recap of the awards and Lakers stuff. And we look forward to starting a new chapter with you guys very, very soon. Tommy?
Bye. I'm not destructing this battle, pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am the... Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo, Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.